Okay, so we will continue with volume 4 and the three higher trainings, specifically the higher training in concentration. And we've covered a lot of the topics already about the meditation object and, you know, the different things like that. We've gone through how you can attain serenity and then actualize the four form realm dhyanas, and how there are polluted and unpolluted versions of it. The polluted versions are the ones where they're talking about the grossness of the lower levels and the peacefulness of the higher, the upper levels. And then the unpolluted one is when they are the meditation object there to go through and get higher states of concentration. The meditation object there is the Four Noble Truths. Okay, and then we talked about the so that the dhyanas, the four form realm dhyanas, are differentiated by the factors that are present and the factors that are absent. Yeah, and the deepness of the concentration, and then the formless realm of absorptions are differentiated by the object. Yeah, okay. Yeah, because you start out infinite space, infinite consciousness, nothingness, and the peak of samsara. Okay, and then last time we went through the eight liberations. Yeah. Which, well, we didn't finish through all of them, so I wanted to do a little bit of review on that, which I will do after we do the prayers. And then we'll get into, more about how that works. And we've been so far doing the concentration, and especially these eight liberations and the nine serial attainments. From the viewpoint of the Sanskrit tradition, the Mahayana tradition, and we'll get into a little bit the way that the Pali tradition differentiates and describes these things. Okay, and it gets pretty wild, yeah, when you think of the dexterity in generating concentration and moving between different states of concentration that many of these yogis have. Yeah, and I don't know about you, but, you know, even the nine sustained attentions before you even get to the form, you know, I haven't even gotten as far as two on that. I'm only on one, because I guess you start on one. Otherwise, I would be starting on zero and hoping to get to one. But, you know, when you hear about what these, you know, great meditators do. But to remember that all of these things, there's Buddhists who do them and non-Buddhists who do them. And you get very different results in terms of the goal of your spiritual practice. Yeah. Okay, so visualize the merit field and the space in front, and we're surrounded by all sentient beings, leading them and taking refuge and generating bodhicitta. Let's generate our motivation. So a lot of the material that we're going through now may be new to many of you, maybe most of you, all of you. And there's a lot of new words, different ideas. So it's important to remember why we're doing this. So in one way, we're doing it so that we gain some familiarization with the various states of concentration and of meditation that we will one day practice and actualize on the path to Buddhahood. And it gives us a kind of some idea of the roadmap. But it also, when we think of the people who have attained these qualities and abilities, it increases our refuge, particularly in the Sangha, the people who are practicing and developing these meditative skills. And so that helps when we take refuge. We know more about what the Sangha refuge is and why we seek their guidance and can trust them. And then another reason why we're studying all this is clearly because we have the great fortune to meet the Holy Dharma in this lifetime. And especially the Mahayana tradition, and to recall, you know, the heart of the Mahayana is the bodhicitta, based on great compassion, based on equanimity, equally caring about each and every sentient being, omitting not one of them. That's a pretty lofty motivation. And even that initial step of equanimity is challenging, let alone great compassion, let alone bodhicitta. But just to hear about these things and know that it's we have the potential to generate them, and there's good reason to exert effort in generating these qualities. And that we're doing it not for our own happiness, our own reputation, you know, our own peaceful abiding and concentration, but we're doing this, you know, the end goal is to really be able to be a reliable guide for other living beings, to also show them the path out of samsara to Buddhahood. So take a moment and generate that motivation. Okay, so I want to review. We briefly covered the eight liberations, but before we go into the next section, I think it's good to review this. Okay, so if we start with the review, we'll start. I won't read everything, but basically at the bottom of page 235. Okay. Yeah. So to remember that these liberations, we're not talking at this point, liberation doesn't mean liberation from samsara. It's liberation from different things, okay? So what defines these liberations as exalted knowers, in other words, as consciousnesses that have entered a path, are not the polluted, that are not polluted by afflictions of their own level, okay? So that's what is defining them. And they're practiced in order to abandon the obscurations to absorption. So we have the afflictive obscurations, which prevent liberation from samsara, the cognitive obscurations, which prevent Buddhahood, okay? And then this is another set of obscurations that snuck in there somewhere, obscurations to absorption that keep you from generating these different meditative, you know, levels of concentration. So these eight liberations are designed to help us overcome that. So the first three liberations, the first one is the liberation of that having form viewing forms. So here, depending on an actual dhyana stage, the person emanates many forms and their own body is visible to others. The second liberation is the liberation of not having form viewing forms. So you are able to generate many emanations, but you're seeing yourself as without a body, okay, formless. And then the third is the liberation of the attractive that eliminates obstacles. And again, depending on an actual dhyana, then the meditator has to counteract their preference to emanate beautiful forms and their dislike of emanating unattractive ones. Yeah. In the same way that, you know, when it comes to, any of the Dharma topics, we like hearing about the benefits. We don't like hearing about the disadvantages of not doing it. Okay. So this, you have to get over that kind of thing. Okay. So the first two liberations eliminate obscurations to emanating forms, and the third eliminates the fault of liking beautiful forms and disliking ugly ones. Yeah. Now, I wonder if everybody agrees what beautiful ones are and what ugly ones are. Probably not. Okay. So these are practiced by bodhisattvas on the great stage of the Mahayana path of accumulation and beyond. Okay. Then the next five liberations, numbers 4 through 7, are called the five paths. No, 4, 5, 6, 7. No, the next five are called the five paths of abiding happily in the present life, because you can attain different states where the mind is very peaceful. So we talked here, it talks about the liberations of infinite space, infinite consciousness, nothingness. And then the fourth one, that's usually called the peak of samsara, but another term for it is neither discrimination nor non-discrimination. Okay, so what does that mean? You're not discriminating and you're not discriminating. Okay, so your mind has kind of gone above the whole thing of discrimination. Okay, and those are the four meditative absorptions in the formless realm. Okay, and in this context, these four act as a cause for the path of liberation and abide in accordance with unpolluted liberation. So these can be used, meditating on the four truths and developing the unity of serenity and insight. Okay. So, and then there's a thing here that although the Arya Bodhisattvas may meditate on the four formless absorptions, which I just mentioned, they don't take rebirth in those realms, because they've exhausted the polluted karma that would cause it. And also because the high-level bodhisattvas, if you're born in that kind of realm where they're just in this deep meditation all day, you can't benefit sentient beings. And that's the whole purpose why Arya Bodhisattvas would generate manifestations in different places. Okay. So they don't do it in those really high absorptions. Because some people are, I'm busy. Okay. I'm going to start on the top of page 237. because we have two terms coming up that are similar, but similar meaning, but also different. Okay, so the eighth liberation is called the liberation of cessation. So it's a meditative equipoise. Yeah, so it's a consciousness, yeah, existing in the continuum of Aryas meditating on emptiness by depending on both a supramundane path, yeah, in other words, a mind that realizes emptiness directly, and a mind of the peak of samsara. Now, usually they say that the fourth dhyana is the best one for meditating on emptiness. Yeah, but why? Because these other ones are, you're in too deep concentration, really, to do the kind of analysis that you need to do when meditating on emptiness. But in this one, the liberation of sensation, you're depending on both a mind that directly perceives emptiness and a mind in the peak of samsara where they're really, you know, in their meditation. So it's quite, you know, a skill and quite unusual to do that because it's more difficult than with, let's say, the fourth dhyana. Yeah. So the liberation of cessation is a consciousness in which coarse feelings and discriminations associated with the mental consciousness have ceased. So, coarse feelings, you know, pleasure, pain, and discriminations, I like, I don't like, it is this, it is that, all of that has ceased. Okay. By stopping these, as well as other coarse consciousnesses and mental factors, yogis stop the afflictions that arise in association with them, rendering the mind very peaceful. Yeah, because what makes our mind so agitated very often, it's we have so many opinions. What are our opinions based on? Discriminations. Yeah. Why is this person doing this? Why aren't they doing that? It should be done this way. It shouldn't be done that way. Yeah. And so our mind is like just full of all these discriminations, full of lots of feelings. I like, I don't like, I'm happy, I'm miserable. Yeah. So, you know, even you have attained deep states of concentration, those things have not been fully suppressed. So in this one, they haven't been eliminated, but they have been suppressed, the gross ones. Yeah. So it makes the mind very peaceful. Yeah. Somebody says, oh, what do you think about this? You know, yeah, you're in your meditation. You don't have to answer that question. Okay. Okay. So through practicing, you know, this eighth liberation, in practicing in this way, meditators increase their meditative pliancy and agility and abandon the obscurations to ceasing discriminations and feelings. Okay, so why do I do it? It, you know, they've already attained, you know, single-pointedness, but you can see, you know, the pliancy, what makes both the body and the mind very flexible and serviceable so that you can meditate on different topics and meditate in different ways. You know, meditating on this kind of state helps increase that pliancy and agility, yeah, in your meditation. So it's not just, you know, I say this because... You know, we hear about single-pointedness and we go, I want to attain single-pointedness. We don't quite know what it is. We hear about shamatha, serenity. I want to attain serenity. Yeah, we also don't know it exactly what it is. But we think that those two are kind of like the end. You know, I just get single-pointed and yeah, that's good enough. I get serenity. Oh, that's fantastic. Very high already. Good enough. What are we hearing when we go through these these eight liberations, whoa, those are just the beginning of developing a mind that is really pliant and flexible and, you know, can do all sorts of things that our ordinary minds can't do, and things that you can't do just with the realization of serenity, or single-pointedness, yeah. So, you know, in so many of the sutras, like in the Heart Sutra, you know, the Buddha's in the concentration of this and that, yeah. So he's always in one concentration or another, yeah. But those give the impression that he's just sitting in meditation, you know, focusing on that particular concentration. If he were, how come in the Heart Sutra, you know, Avalokiteshvara, Shariputra, ask Chenrezig Avalokiteshvara a question. Avalokiteshvara gives this whole answer. Yeah. Now, supposedly the Buddha is just in meditation. He's not hearing any of this. Except after Avalokiteshvara gets done talking, the Buddha says, oh, you did very well. You explained it perfectly. Yeah, which means he heard it. Okay. And they actually say that it was through the Buddha's inspiration that Shariputra asked the question and Avalokiteshvara answered it. Yeah. But he wasn't just in a meditation, everything else blocked out. The sutra, you know, that we recite on Tuesday about what bodhisattvas do at the time of death, you know, again, well, except there it said the Buddha said these words, you know, but he was still in concentration, yeah. So many different states. Okay, so liberation is cessation, yeah. Remember that. That's a meditative equipoise. It's a concentration in the continuum of Aryas, meditating on emptiness, who are depending on a supramundane path, yeah, a mind perceiving emptiness directly, and the mind of the peak of samsara. That's what liberation of sensation is. Now, the next paragraph, it says the liberation of cessation differs from the absorption of cessation, okay, which is an abstract composite. So it's an impermanent phenomena, but it's not form and it's not consciousness. So one of these abstract phenomena. It's also in an Arya's continuum, okay. It is not a consciousness, but is the state in which coarse feelings and discriminations associated with the subtle primary mental consciousness have ceased by the power of a supramundane path. Okay, so it kind of sounds like, although it doesn't exactly say this, that the liberation of cessation is what brings the absorption of cessation, okay? So it is the same as the cessation of discrimination and feeling. Yeah, it is not an actual absorption, but it is called one because it arises dependent on meditating in a meditative absorption, okay? So it's the state of in an Arya's continuum, and it's the state in which coarse feelings and coarse discriminations have been suppressed. Yeah. Okay. So Shravaka meditators absorb in the last five liberations in order to abide happily in the present life. Bodhisattvas practice them for the benefit of others. Say, big difference here. The first seven liberations show a progressive refinement of samadhi, while the eighth liberation requires both concentration and insight. Yeah. All eight liberations can be attained only by those who have entered a path and who possess an actual dhyana. Okay, so only those to enter the Shravaka path, you have renunciation of samsara, day and night, like the prayer of the three principal aspects of the path says. Yeah, and to enter the Mahayana path, you have spontaneous bodhicitta whenever you see or think of any sentient being. Okay, all eight liberations can be attained only by those who have entered a path and who possess an actual dhyana. But only non-returners and arhats who have mastered the four dhyanas and the four formless absorptions and Arya Bodhisattvas can attain the eighth liberation. That one, that's the liberation of cessation that we just went through. Okay? So that's the Sanskrit tradition description of them. Now we're going to do the Pali tradition, which is similar but different. Yeah, how do they say? Same, same, different, different. Yeah. Yeah?
I was surprised to read this section in the sense that in studying paths and grounds, there's a big deal made about bodhisattvas who enter the path of seeing and can emanate 100 bodies. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's greater than what these bodhisattvas
yes,
can do.
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just had never heard that someone on the path, a bodhisattva on the path of accumulation could emanate bodies.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. It doesn't mean all of them do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to get into the super knowledges, the superpowers, and, you know, so. Yeah. And then, you know, we have to see, you know, that we're getting the broad description of what these stages are. It doesn't mean every single person on them has, you know, meditates in the same way, gets the same realizations in the same order in the same amount of time. I mean, there's so much difference in sentient beings and in sentient beings' circumstances. Yeah, so that's not, you know, because, you know, I talk a lot about how our mind likes everything nice and neat, laid out, systematic, never changes, and everybody fits in those slots. Yeah? And this thing, that our mind being attached to that kind of thing, can actually be a big hindrance for us. Yeah? Because, you know, whenever something happens that doesn't fit in one of our categories, instead of thinking, well, what's going on here and what's this thing really and what are the categories, we just go and say, it's got to fit in one of the categories. I can't stand it if it doesn't. Yeah, and then we get all, you know, wigged out about that. Yes.
Is it because, like, by motivation that this happens? Like, okay, I want to be a bodhisattva who can emanate bodies as soon as possible. Then I know the route that I need to go. Or is it more kind of following the karma and propensities that are just carrying you through the motivations? Or
it depends on even, the individual.
Everyone. I mean, even the intention to get there will,
because some of them may have a lot of karma from previous lives. Maybe they've generated these realizations in previous lives. So this life, it's very easy to actualize them. Other people maybe have never, you know, and so it's going to take longer and people have different amount of effort. And, you know, one person, their family says, you know, come home, I need you. And the other person, their family says, get out of here, I can't stand you. And that's going to influence what goes on. Okay. So, and people, you know, it's like when babies are born, you ask any parent if your child, if their child came in with a personality, you know, from day one. And they all say, yes, you know, my kids are not blank slates. They come in with different habits, different tendencies. So the same thing when practicing the path. Yeah? Okay. I mean, you can see it just among us, you know. Some people like one thing, some people like another. Some people understand one thing, some people understand another. Yeah? It's... Yeah. Okay, now the Pali tradition. So the eight liberations are enumerated in the Majjhima Nikaya and in the Digha Nikaya. And they're also described in the Patisamabhimagga in the Kodaka Nikaya and the Astalini by Buddhaghosa. Okay, so I wanted to show that, you know, this is orthodox stuff. It's not stuff, you know, and quoted for the eight liberations from the Sanskrit tradition, you know, said which texts talk about these. Okay. So here, Pali tradition, first liberation. It's called the embodied looking at forms. So the attainment of the four dhyanas using a kasina derived from a color in one's own body. Okay. A kasina, this is one of the ways, one of the objects that people in the Pali tradition use for generating serenity. So it's kind of a shape. Some say it's like a circle or, you know, something. And they come in colors so that your meditation object is a color. Yeah. And some of the kasinas are, you know, the four elements. So, you know, you have one of earth or water or fire, you know, and that's your meditative object. Those are the kasinas, yeah? And so so here it's saying that they have those specific meditative objects, meditation objects. Okay, but... You know, where do they get the colors from? Because this one, you're meditating on a kasina. It's a color in your own body. So you look. Okay, well, there's a cut. So there's red. There's, oh, I have lots of things that are brown. Yeah, freckles. Yeah. So, you know, some color for your body. Or you stick out your tongue. Or you look at your fingernails, okay? So it's a color based on your body, okay? So meditators perceive themselves as embodied and using a color found on their body as the initial object of meditation, okay? Initial object of meditation. The color of their hair, blood, eyes, and so forth, they generate the learning and counterpart signs and attain dhyana. Okay, so what are the learning and counterpart signs? Yeah, the learning sign is the one that you begin with. The counterpart sign is usually the nimitta. I'm going to read you the definitions in the glossary. Okay, learning sign, a subtler object that, okay, so the preliminary sign is the one you start with, maybe, you know, a circle of some color, yeah. That's your preliminary sign. So the learning sign is a subtler object that replaces the preliminary sign when the meditator sees the mental image of something, a kasina, for example, as clearly with closed eyes as with open eyes looking at it. So when they do the meditation, they look at the kasina, so maybe you're meditating on blood. Yeah, the color of your blood. I guess some blood's red, some blood's bluish. Yeah, so you have your kasina. Yeah, so your preliminary sign is looking at the kasina, the physical object, yeah? And then you start, you know, closing your eyes and imagining it, visualizing it. When you can see with closed eyes the kasina, the color that you're meditating on in this case, with in your mind as clearly as you see it with open eyes, okay, then that's the learning sign. Okay, then the other one, the other sign was the counterpart sign. Okay, so in the learning sign, you're still focused on that color and you're seeing it quite clearly. The counterpart sign, definition or description, I should say, the meditation object of a dhyana consciousness, or a conceptual object that arises on the basis of a visible object. Okay. Sometimes they talk about the counterpart sign as what they call a nimitta, yeah, which is something that appears to your mental consciousness that then becomes your object of meditation that you use for generating serenity. Yeah. And this is, for example, if you start out using the breath as your object of meditation, yeah, that is too gross of an object to generate serenity. So what happens, you know, let's say you're concentrating on the tip of your nose, and that's the place where you're watching your breath go in and out. You know, when your concentration gets really deep, then you have an appearance of like some kind of light in the space in front. And then that becomes your object to meditation, not the breath. Okay. But you don't deliberately create that nimitta, and you don't sit there and go, okay, where is it? Where is it? I've been breathing for 5 minutes. Where's the nimitta? No, you have to get to some stage of, you know, concentration there. Yeah. Okay. So they use a color found in their body as their object to meditation. Yeah. And then they generate the learning and counterpart signs, and they attain a dhyana. Okay. Then the second one is the formless looking at a form. So the attainment of the dhyanas using a kasina derived from an external object, not your body, such as the four elements. So meditators perceive themselves as disembodied and enter a dhyana using an external color as a kasina. To progress from the first to the second liberation, they release some degree of conceit and attachment regarding their own physical appearance. And before progressing to the third liberation, they do the same regarding others' bodies. So this becomes quite helpful also when you're doing the mindfulness of the body. Okay. So releasing some degree of attachment and conceit regarding a physical appearance. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. Do you have some attachment and conceit about your physical appearance? Yeah. Do you wish you looked different than you look? Yeah. Had some quality that you don't have, didn't have some quality that you do have. Yeah. And how much energy that takes away from in our mind, worrying about our body. How do we look? Oh, I'm getting old. My hair is turning gray. It's falling out. I can't see as well as I used to. I can't walk as well as I used to. I can't digest as well as I used to. Oh, what's happening to me? What is anybody going to like me now that I have gray hair? Now that I have no hair? Oh, but I'm shaving it. But this looks the same as somebody who's bald. You know, oh, do I want to be bald or do I want to have stubble? You know, it will affect how people look at me. And, you know, if you're a woman, you have a few dark hairs. Oh, we got to get rid of them. And with men, you want more dark hairs that you have to, you know, and like, how am I going to look if I shave? You know, it's a pain in the neck, isn't it? Yeah. Waste so much time, you know, with attachment or conceit. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You see, Venerable Jigme and I, you know, we race up the stairs from the bottom floor. Yeah. And sometimes she wins and sometimes I win. So when I went, oh, yes, I got up the stairs before Venerable Jigme did. I'm in better shape than her. But sometimes she gets up the stairs before me, and I'm like, oh, God, am I going to get up? And then she's going, oh, I'm better than children. I got, you know, look at her, just slugging along. Yeah. Yeah. What use is that kind of conceit? Yeah, what use is that kind of attachment? It's like stupid, isn't it? Okay. So, okay. So then, with the third, okay, to progress from the first to the second liberation, the meditators release some degree of conceit and attachment, not all of it, but some degree regarding their own physical appearance. And before progressing to the third liberation, they do so regarding others' bodies. Yeah, whether what they think about others' bodies. Oh, that person has a nice body. Yeah, oh, that person's kind of ugly. You know, all of that kind of discrimination that goes on, that again is so stupid when we really think about it. So the third liberation, okay, is resolved only upon the beautiful that eliminates obstacles. That's the name of the liberation. So the attainment of the dhyanas through using either a very pure and beautiful colored kasina or the four Brahma viharas as the object of meditation. So the first two liberations lead to perceiving the body as foul, yeah, and the third releases any excessive disgust by focusing on a beautiful object. Okay, so the first two, you're seeing your body as foul. You take a color from, you know, your own body, and that's your meditation object, yeah. Then, yeah, it's like, oh, that's what my blood looks like. That's not very sexy. You know, oh, that's, you know, the color of my big toenail. You know, that's also not so pleasant. I don't want anybody to see my big toenails. You know? Yeah. So you see the body is foul. And this third one releases any excessive disgust, because on this one, you deliberately focus on a beautiful object. Okay. When cultivating the four immeasurables as a liberation of mind, meditators see sentient beings as attractive. Okay. So that, you know, orange thing becomes very attractive. Yeah. Okay. Okay, then the fourth through the seventh liberation. So the four formless absorptions that lead meditators to experience a pleasant abiding in this life. Okay, so here meditators enter the first absorption by transcending all perceptions of form. They enter the last three absorptions by surmounting the object of the preceding absorption. Okay. So, you know how if, you know, to enter the, you know, the liberate, the one where you're, God, I can't get the words out, you know, that limitless consciousness, you know, the first of the, of that one, you have to transcend all perceptions of form, okay, because there your object is becoming limitless consciousness, and perceptions of form have to do with the desire realm. Yeah. Okay, they enter the last three, yeah, by surmounting the object of the preceding absorption, like we learned before. Yeah. So you would go from the formless realm, infinite consciousness. No, you start out with infinite space, then you go to infinite consciousness. So to get to infinite consciousness, you have to go beyond infinite space. You know, and to get to nothingness, you have to go beyond infinite consciousness, and so on. Okay, then the eighth liberation, according to the Pali tradition, yeah, is the attainment of cessation of discrimination and feeling, also called the absorption of cessation. Remember, we just came to that one, which is an abstract phenomena, yeah, in which all the coarse feelings and discriminations have been suppressed. Okay, so this is an absence of all manifest activities of the six consciousnesses. Yeah, this is real spaced outness, yeah? Attained by a combination of serenity and insight, so it's not totally spaced out. I use this thing of spaced out in the sense of that you're in deep concentration, nothing's going to bother you. But, you know, they've got to this by a combination of serenity and insight. And it's accessible only by non-returners, yeah, who have realized emptiness, and arhats, yeah, who've also realized emptiness, and these have mastered the preceding meditative absorptions. So you don't jump from one of the lower ones to this one. You have to master each one in order. Okay, so now it's going to talk about how you attain this one, the eighth one. So attain it, to attain it, Pali commentators say the meditator enters the first dhyana, okay? After emerging from it, she applies insight to contemplate the dhyana factors as impermanent, dukkha, and no self, okay? So that is the insight part of it, yeah? And to do the insight, because the insight involves analysis, they have to come out of the dhyana, because in the dhyana, you're focused just on one object. And analysis involves, you know, you look at something from different perspectives and so on. Okay, so here, you know, you're looking, you're coming out of that concentration, looking back at it, yeah, and analyzing its impermanence, its nature of being unsatisfactory, and its being without a self. Okay? So you do that regarding when you're coming out and looking at the first dhyana. Okay? So then, when you've done that, then you enter the second dhyana, and upon emerging from it, she similarly analyzes its factors in terms of the three characteristics. So remember the different factors of them. There's a chart back here you can refer to on page 221. Okay? So you can look at those. Yeah, and you analyze those factors because that's what makes that meditative state what it is. Yeah. Okay, so you enter the second dhyana. Upon emerging from it, she similarly analyzes its factors in terms of the three characteristics. So you hear the Pali tradition all the time talk about three characteristics. Yeah, they're important. And they're also found in our tradition, too. You know, when we talk about the 16 factors of the Four Truths. Okay, so she continues like this up through the absorption of nothingness. So she would then, you know, enter into the third dhyana when they come out of it, analyzing its factors in terms of the three characteristics, then do with the fourth. Similarly, then go up to the formless realm, so infinite space, yeah, and then, infinite space, then infinite consciousness, okay, yeah, and you develop insight regarding all of those meditative states. So you can see if somebody really develops insight in those, they're not going to be attached to them. Yeah. Okay. Having emerged from the absorption of nothingness, that's the third of the formless ones, and contemplated its factors as impermanent, dukkha, and no self, she makes the resolution to enter the cessation of discrimination and feeling. Before entering that cessation, she determines how long she wants to remain in it. This can be from a short time up to 7 days. And if she's a monastic, she resolves that if the Sangha needs her, she will automatically emerge from this absorption. Okay. Now, why do they make all these determinations before they go into the absorption? Because once they're in that absorption, they're not thinking about, they're not discriminating, thinking about other things. So, you know, they think about before, how long do I want to stay in this absorption? Okay, I'm going to stay for an hour, I'm going to stay for 3 days, whatever it is. Yeah, then they enter that absorption, and then automatically then they wake up from it when that period of time is over. In the same way, some people have the ability, I don't have it, but they don't need alarm clocks before they go to bed at night. They say, I'm going to wake up at such and such a time, and boing, they are. Yeah, any of you have that ability? Yeah? Oh, quite, that's good. Yeah, I don't. But, so always have an alarm clock. Okay. And then, you know, if somebody's a monastic, you know, they say, if the Sangha needs me, then I have to come out of my meditation and do that. Yeah. Why? Because at that moment, that is more important than staying in your own peaceful abiding. Because remember, at this point, they're doing this. The motivation for the Pali people is it's a pleasant abiding in this life. Yeah, so it's very pleasant to be in this meditation stages. But still, if somebody needs you, then that becomes more important. Okay, so she's entering the... before entering that cessation, yeah, she determines how long. So this is she's made the determination to enter the cessation of discrimination and feeling. Yeah, made that determination, enters that absorption. Okay, so she then enters the absorption on the base of neither discrimination nor non-discrimination, a.k.a. the peak of samsara, and from there goes into the cessation of discrimination and feeling, in which all mental functions stop for the predetermined length of time. Okay? Now, when this time is over, she emerges from that state and mental functions resume. Yeah, because you gotta, you know, go on alms round, you gotta check your email. You know, I don't know what people did in those times, but you have to use your conventional mind. So Bhikkhuni Dhammadina explained that the meditator does not think, I will attain the cessation of discrimination and of feeling. I am attaining this, or I have attained it. Later, she does not think, I will emerge from the cessation of discrimination and feeling. I am emerging from it, or I have emerged from it. All this is accomplished by the force of the determination made prior to that meditative session. Okay? So as with anyone in the fourth dhyana and above, this meditator's breath stops when entering the cessation of discrimination and feeling. Yeah, because if you were still breathing, you would feel, you know, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral sensation of the air as it going in and out. There are stories in the scriptures of arhats in this meditative state who were mistaken as dead by people who saw them. Yeah, when the people tried to cremate what they thought was a dead body, it would not burn. Yeah, when emerging from this state, the first consciousness to arise is the fruition consciousness of either a non-returner or an arhat that has nirvana as its object. So when they come out of that state, yeah, it's, you know, again, they have nirvana, emptiness, as their object. And they're either a non-returner or an arhat. So the cessation of discrimination and feeling is considered an exalted state and the highest of all samadhis. Okay. But it is not a support for higher attainments because arhats also enter it, and they've attained the final state of their vehicle. Yeah. So it's not clear why this state would be sought. Okay, so if, arhats are entering it, but why? It's not going to lead them to any higher state of realization. They've already, because they're not interested in Buddhahood, you know. So they've attained arhatship, and yeah, so, yeah, that state doesn't bump you up to anything higher. So it's not clear why this state would be sought. Nonetheless, offerings made to those who have just emerged from the cessation of discrimination and feeling are said to create special great merit. And that's probably because it's just, they have the realization of emptiness and they have this mental dexterity to generate these high states of concentration. So for this reason, Mahakasapa was one of the Buddha's foremost disciples, would often enter this absorption for a short while before going on alms round to benefit those who offered food to him, because they would create this special kind of merit because he would have just come out of this meditative state. Okay, so that's the eight liberations, yeah, from the Sanskrit view and the Pali view. We're next going to go into the nine serial absorptions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These elaborations are practiced in the path of accumulation or path of the preparation. Are they specific to be practiced in the path of the preparation in order to achieve the the peak of samsara before the supermundane path?
Not all the arhats attain the peak of samsara. Yeah, they can attain arhatship just with what's called access concentration, you know, the preparatory stages before the first dhyana. Yeah, so why do they meditate on the eight liberations? You're talking about those, yeah. I think it's to develop these different states, and because, you know, they have a pleasant abiding in this life, and to develop that kind of mental dexterity. This is talking in terms of the arhats, yeah, or the people following Shravaka and solitary realizer path. Bodhisattvas have to generate all of these mental states. They don't necessarily start generating all of them at the path of accumulation. You know, I think that they probably go at different levels, at different speeds, and so on. That's my guess. Yeah. Okay, 9 serial absorptions. Yeah, because a lot of the bodhisattvas, you know, they need to accumulate so much merit, and the merit is done not in meditation time. Yeah, it's in the break time. Yeah, and that's how, you know, it's those times that accumulate. You need three countless great eons of merit. So, yeah, they aren't all in meditation. They're going around emanating forms to benefit sentient beings. Yeah. Okay, 9 serial absorptions. So they're spoken of in the Ornament of Clear Realization and its commentaries. Also called the 9 abidings in equipoise, these 9 are the serial absorptions. Here's the 9, 4 dhyanas, the 4 meditative absorptions of the formless realm, and the absorption of cessation. Okay. The Sanskrit tradition considers the first 8 supramundane paths. So they've realized emptiness directly. The 9 serial absorptions are so called because meditators must initially attain them successfully in the forward order, after having mastered all 9 in the ascending and descending order, they train to enter them in a leap-over manner. Okay? So you have these 9 in order, you know, first dhyana, second, third, fourth dhyana. Yeah, limitless space, limitless consciousness, nothingness, the peak of, you know, neither discrimination or non-discrimination. Yeah. And then the absorption of, what was it called? The absorption of cessation. Yeah. So they do all of those in order. Yeah. That's the easy way. Okay. This is done. Here's why they do that. This is done in order to develop mental dexterity. Yeah. They develop them in order, and then they do the leap over, which we're going to get to. But you'll remember when we talked about leap over before that they leap over certain things. Okay, so they do it in order to develop mental dexterity, and on that basis to cultivate many other abilities leading up to the capabilities of a Buddha. That's when bodhisattvas do it. So the leap over meditative absorption is presented differently in the Ornament of Clear Realization, yeah, Mahayana text, and in the Treasury of Knowledge, yeah, based on Vaibhasika and Sautantrika tenets. Okay, so the Treasury of Knowledge says, join the 2 types to the 8 levels. Leap over 1 through going and coming. Proceed to the 3rd dissimilar type. This is the leaping meditative absorption. Now you know why we need commentaries. Okay? Unless you are really a sharp faculty disciple who would understand this, the rest of us go, what are they talking about? Okay? So this meditation, the leap over, is done by arhats who are human beings. They have clear minds, lack afflictions, and have control over their concentration so they can unwaveringly engage in this practice. The eight levels are the four dhyanas and the four formless absorptions. The two, that's in that, when it says join the two types to the eight levels, those are the eight levels. The two types are polluted and unpolluted. So polluted, you know, merely suppressing, you know, the suppressing by seeing the disadvantages of the lower state and the benefits of the higher, and unpolluted, meaning they have a realization of emptiness, okay? So those are the two types. And those are to be joined with the eight levels, okay? So here's how they do it. First, meditators develop the ability to absorb in the polluted eight absorptions in the ascending order from the polluted first dhyana to the polluted peak of samsara. Okay? So just with, you know, the gross, seeing the disadvantages of one and then benefits the other. You go to the peak of samsara in the ascending order. Then you do it from the descending order. So you're in a state of metta concentration, the peak of samsara, then you go down to nothingness, then you go down to infinite consciousness, you know, these lower levels, and you go back to the first dhyana, okay? Then they do the same thing. So that's what the polluted wants. Then they do the same using the eight unpolluted absorptions. So this is, so realizing emptiness, going up, yeah, to the absorption of cessation, then going down again to the first dhyana. And so this is known as the long preparation. Yeah. Next, they do the short preparation. So, you know, and, you know, probably, at the beginning when they're doing it, it may take several different meditation sessions to do this, but they get to a point where in one meditation session they can go from one level to the next, which, you know, can be very difficult. Yeah. I mean, we see how difficult it is, you know, changing our energy from one you're offering service to studying, or from when you're meditating to going to breakfast, you know. So here they're really changing the sphere of consciousness, you know, these different levels. So not easy. Okay, so that was the long preparation. Now the short preparation. They absorb in a polluted first dhyana, after which they leap over the second dhyana and absorbed in a polluted third dhyana. Then they leap over the fourth dhyana and absorb in the polluted infinite space, followed by leaping over infinite consciousness and absorbing in polluted nothingness. They then descend from, going backwards, from to the polluted first concentration, in the same leap-over fashion. Here, all the absorptions are polluted or mundane ones when you're going up and going down, yeah, leaping over. This is followed by doing the same using unpolluted, super-mundane absorptions, starting with the first dhyana, skipping the second, going to the second, or the third, perceiving emptiness, with the third, then going to infinite space and so on up, and then going back down again. Okay. finally, so that's the short preparation. Then finally, they do the actual leap over absorption. So first they absorb in a polluted first dhyana, leap over the second dhyana, and absorb in an unpolluted third dhyana. So they're not only leaping over one of the levels, but they're going from a polluted dhyana to an unpolluted one. Okay? Then they leap over, so now they're in the third unpolluted third dhyana. They leap over the fourth dhyana and enter a polluted infinite space absorption. Leap over the infinite consciousness and enter an unpolluted nothingness absorption. Then they go back down again from unpolluted nothingness to polluted infinite consciousness. And or they leap over infinite consciousness and they go to the polluted infinite space and so on back down to the first dhyana. Okay? And alternating whether it's polluted or unpolluted. Okay? So there are other ways to do the leap over absorption too. For example, starting with the unpolluted first dhyana. Yeah, this time you're starting unpolluted, leaping over the second dhyana and absorbing in a polluted third dhyana, leaping over the fourth dhyana, entering an unpolluted space, and so on in the ascending and descending fashion. So this is like the previous one, except here you start with an unpolluted mind. And yeah. Okay. In addition, meditators, here's another way of doing it. Meditators can begin with the polluted second dhyana, leap over the third dhyana, and enter into the unpolluted fourth dhyana, ascending in this manner to the peak of samsara, and then descending again back this time to the polluted second dhyana. So there are many more ways to do this meditation as well. The meditative dexterity of these yogis is amazing, isn't it? When you think of doing this. You know. Another version of the leap over meditation is described in Maitreya's Ornament of Clear Realization. This is done by bodhisattvas on the path of meditation. Yeah, so they've, they have a direct realization of emptiness, they've eliminated the artificial defilements, they're in the process of eliminating the innate ones, yeah. So, bodhisattvas on the path of meditation, and they do this to develop a very flexible mind and to perfect the meditative absorptions. So here's what Maitreya says in Ornament of Clear Realizations. Having gone and come, up and down, ascending and descending, in the nine meditative absorptions, including cessation in the two aspects. Yeah, so this one, you're getting the ninth serial absorption, the cessation of discrimination and feeling, coarse discrimination and feeling. Okay, those are the two aspects. A consciousness included in the desire realm, not in meditative equipoise, is taken as the boundary. Now they're talking about desire realm. Why? I thought we were beyond that. Whereupon one enters in absorption in the manner of leap over, leaping over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, going variously until entering into the absorption of cessation. So sometimes leaping over 1, states, sometimes leaping over two, sometimes leaping over three. My goodness, yeah, not easy. In the context of the leap-over meditation, the eight meditative absorptions are minds realizing emptiness, and the absorption of cessation is an abstract composite. The desire realm mind focuses on the attributes of the desire realm. It's really gross. Forms, sounds, smell, tastes, touches, opinions, ideas. You know, so desire realm, what our mind is now, is a very coarse mind. So to prepare, talking about bodhisattvas only here, they first master all eight meditative absorptions, the four dhyanas and four formless absorptions, in their ascending order. Okay, yeah? As well as they don't just stop with the peak of samsara, like we just went through. They also bump up to the absorption of cessation. Yeah? This is followed by entering all nine in the descending order from absorption of cessation, going to the peak of samsara, one by one going down, you know, to the first dhyana. And then this is followed by entering all nine in the descending order, beginning with the absorption of cessation and ending with the first dhyana. Okay, so far you got it. Next, yeah. Can you imagine, you know, when do you get to the point where you say, I've done all of these? You know, there's always more to do, isn't it? So next, they meditate successfully in order on the eight meditative absorptions in the ascending order, beginning with the actual first dhyana. In between each of the eight, they enter the absorption of cessation, which was, you know, your first dhyana, second dhyana. Absorption of cessation is up here. Yeah? Okay. They in between first dhyana and second, absorption is cessation. So the sequence is first dhyana, absorption is cessation. Second dhyana, absorption of cessation. And so on up to the peak of samsara, followed by absorption of cessation. Yeah? If this doesn't lower your arrogance, I don't know what will. Yeah? Yeah, so next time you're feeling a little bit puffed up, yeah, think about this. Between the ascending and descending sequences, sharp faculty disciples, yeah, here's another way you do it, enter a desire realm mind that is a bridge between the two sequences. So you have one sequence is the ascending order, and the second sequence is the descending order. So when they get up, they get to the absorption of cessation. And then from there, what do? They go back to a desire realm more. Realm mind. So you're at the absorption of cessation, you're not feeling any discrimination, any feelings, mind is perfectly tranquil, and then you jump right down to a desire realm mind. Okay? And that is the bridge between the forward sequence up to the cessation, the absorption of cessation, and it bridges till the descending, going back down again, okay? So being sharp faculty, they can go from the very subtle, refined absorption of cessation to this very coarse, bridge desire realm mind, and then to the absorption of cessation. Again, that initiates the descending sequence. Okay, so get to absorption, cessation, then desire realm mind, then absorption, cessation again, and then they start leaping over, going down, yeah? For dull faculty bodhisattva, this is too difficult. So after completing the ascending order, they enter a mind called the peak of samsara of small capacity, which is a little coarser than the peak of samsara. And from there, they enter the bridge desire realm mind. Yeah, that still sounds impossible, doesn't it? And then they begin the descending sequence. In the descending order, the nine serial absorptions are alternated with a desire realm mind. Okay, so before you alternated it with the absorption of cessation, now you're already, you know, in the dhyanas and the formless realm absorptions, and you jump from one of those to a desire realm mind, and then back up to the next level of wherever you were at before, and back to desire realm mind. Okay, so it's like, you know, you go from boiling water to freezing water to boiling water to freezing water. You know, I mean, it's just this, yeah, it's, they're not boiling and freezing, but just this incredible difference in mental states, yeah. So bodhisattvas enter the absorption of cessation, desire realm mind, peak of samsara, desire realm mind, nothingness, desire realm mind, and so on down to the first dhyana, desire realm mind. Okay, so that's another way to do it. When they become fully proficient in this, meditators can use either the absorption of cessation or the desire realm mind as the interwoven state, you know, what they do between as they're ascending and descending, the ones in the middle. They can use either the absorption of cessation or the desire realm mind as the interwoven state as they sequentially ascend and descend the eight meditative absorptions. Okay, so, you know, going up, they can enter, you know, this one, they can, you know, either desire realm mind or the absorption of cessation. Before entering the leap over meditation, bodhisattvas set their intention, yeah, after entering absorption, I will go from the first dhyana to the absorption of cessation, you know, and then back to the second dhyana, or however they're doing it. In that way, they can pass from one absorption to the next in the ascending sequence while remaining in meditative equipoise. Yeah, so they don't come out, yeah. So there are 34 leap-over bases, yeah. In the ascending Lord order, there are 16, the eight meditative absorptions and the eight absorptions of cessation that are in between them. Yeah, so first dhyana, absorption of cessation, second dhyana, absorption. Okay, so that's how you get, when you're going up, you get 16 of them. In the descending order, there are 18 bases because all nine serial absorptions alternate with a desire realm mind. Yeah. And so since you're going up, with the eight, but then you also have to alternate with the absorption of cessation at the top. And again, when you come down, so that's how you get 18. So that makes a total of 34. In this verse above, it is said that bodhisattvas leap over 1, 2, 3, and so forth, because during the meditative absorptions, the mind is focused in deep, single-pointed meditation. Meditators emerge from that and have a desire realm mind that is a coarse, non-equipoise mind. That mind doesn't even have serenity. Yeah. When they enter the next absorption, they must leap over the previous one, or the previous two, or the previous three, however many they're leaping over. Okay. And then, for example, in the descending order, they go from the absorption of cessation to a desire realm mind. To enter the next absorption, they must leap over the absorption of cessation, that's at the top, to directly enter the peak of samsara, alternating a subtle equipoise mind and a coarse non-equipoise mind is extremely difficult. And the ability to do this makes the meditative abilities of these bodhisattvas truly remarkable. How they train their minds and the abilities they gain from doing so are an indication of how powerful our minds can be as a result of correct practice done with a Dharma motivation. The difference between, so that's important to remember, yeah? Dharma motivation, not for the fun of it, not so that people bring you offerings or give you a grand reputation. The difference between the serial absorptions and the eight liberations is a matter of emphasis. The liberations are spoken of from the viewpoint of being free from certain obscurations. The serial absorptions emphasize that the body, mind, and mental factors are in equilibrium, because that is what allows them to go, you know, those serial absorptions. In the chapters on the higher training in concentration, we have learned of the astonishing abilities that sincere meditators can develop. We may wonder why they are explained to those of us who are beginners. Won't some people be discouraged by their own comparatively feeble concentration when they see how far they have to go? Well, you can get discouraged if you want to. It's your prerogative. You know, you're used to getting discouraged. You know, you just do it automatically. Or, okay, this depends on our perspective. Learning about the capacities of the human mind inspires us. We know that if we put in the same time and effort as past meditators have, that we too can actualize abilities like theirs. In addition, knowing that there are Buddhist meditators who have already attained these abilities gives us a better idea of the Sangha that is our object of refuge. Faith and respect in them automatically arises in our mind when we see their abilities. As a side benefit, if we have the tendency towards spiritual arrogance, learning of these advanced practices checks our pride, suppressing that hindrance to spiritual progress. Okay, so we're out of time, no questions tonight. Yeah, see, I told you, no questions. Yeah. Oh, Sujay. Oh, now I'm going to get grilled.
By using the mind of the desire realm.
The mind of what?
The mind of desire realm.
Yeah.
In these eight liberations for bodhisattvas, Is this also related to the practice of Tantra as a preparation?
Probably. Yeah, I would suspect so. And I think there's some comment later about that. Yeah. Yeah. Because in tantric practice, you have to use the desire realm mind sometimes, not in all your meditation, but sometimes. Yeah. Okay. So we will dedicate. And thank you for no more questions. Yeah. But we are out of time, and we reached a new section. Next time we'll start talking about the super knowledges, five and six super knowledges. So that will similarly blow your mind. Okay, it'll make this stuff sound easy, you know? Not necessarily, because the super knowledges, the five, you know, can be attained by people who haven't realized emptiness. Whereas this last leap over practice, it's only by arhats or non-returners. Oh, no, that was the one before that. This one's only by bodhisattvas. Yeah. Okay.